Ted Dabrowski is hoping he's the man to prevent Governor J.B. Pritzker from winning a third term to lead Illinois. Dabrowski is the son of immigrants. He's a former banker turned conservative public policy researcher. He thinks voters have soured on Pritzker and Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, where statewide races in Illinois have typically been decided. But before he can take on the Democrat, he'll need to beat three other Republicans in March, and he knows it will be a challenge. On this episode of Politically Speaking, I asked Dabrowski how he overcomes Darren Bailey's name ID and how he would lead the Prairie State if he were elected governor. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, an in-depth examination of Missouri and Illinois politics.
The instant we got to Illinois, we joined the Green Party. This was 2000.
So I've tried to push for those that I think are honest and really care about the future of the city.
You know, this wasn't a path that I thought I would choose in 2012 when I was able to win the closest Republican victory in the nation.
If it's something that will help Southern Illinois, I'll work with him on it. If there's something he's doing wrong, then you got to fight him on it.
I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe less government is better, and I believe local control is better.
I choose to fight for working families and for union members.
Welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm St. Louis Public Radio's Metro East reporter, Will Bauer. Joining us is one of the four candidates vying for the Republican nomination in Illinois' governor's race.
My name is Ted Dabrowski, and I'm running for governor here in Illinois.
Thanks for being here, Ted. And maybe before we jump into all the issues and the campaign and whatnot, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to tell voters who you are. So if you can, fill us in on your background.
Yeah, so I'm a son of immigrants. Both my parents immigrated to Chicago. My mom from Ecuador when she was a 19-year-old. My father escaped communist Poland from in the 50s, but finally made it to Chicago around late 50s, early 60s. And they met in Chicago to live their American dream, and that's a big part of who I am, being a son of immigrants. And assimilation was important for them, so we became learned English, educated ourselves, fought hard to just fit in the country and prosper, and we've done that. And I listened to my parents about traveling and about educating myself, and I ended up getting a job in Citibank in Mexico. I worked there for 6 years. I got to work in Poland for 9, so I had this amazing international experience. Two of my children were born in Mexico. Two of them were born in Poland, and so that's fun. Been married 31 years to a wife that's been great to travel with me and allow me to do a lot of these things that have been fun. Have been back in Illinois since 2007 after living in Poland, and have just been spending the last 15 years working hard on policy for Illinois, trying to improve things, lower taxes, create more growth. Just as a news and policy researcher with both Illinois Policy Institute and WirePoints. And so I've been dedicating myself to that. And now I said, hey, I can't keep watching from the sidelines. I'm jumping in to run for governor.
Was there anything in particular that made you say, hey, I need to get in this race?
Well, look, for a long time, I've been trying to work on providing policies and solutions that I've given to the state legislature. I've given to the media. I've been working on this for a long time, and I've said, my gosh, this is an amazing state. Why are we a bottom five state on so many things? We should be one of the best states in the country. And I kept seeing nothing happen. But there was a big thing that triggered me, and I won't do the whole story, but I was writing about something I'm very passionate about, is our schools are failing to teach our kids to read. And I highlighted Decatur public schools were just 2% of black third grade students could read at grade level. I made a big deal about that, not just Decatur, but Peoria and Rockford and Waukegan and Cicero. Did a big report on that, and it made it to the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal there was the debate 4 years ago where Pritzker and Bailey were debating, and the moderator asked the Pritzker, hey, tell us about that Wall Street Journal report that says kids can't read in Illinois. And Pritzker just said, he name-called my organization. He said, we're a bunch of, carnival barkers, right wingers. He said that we were wrong, when in fact it was his own data about kids can't read. And when he threw 8,000 Decatur kids under the bus, I just said, that's a moment where I can't watch Pritzker not address the real problems in Illinois. He won't acknowledge them, so he won't fix them. And that's when I decided I have to come in.
So before you run against Mr. Pritzker, you're going to be running against three other candidates on the Republican side of the ticket. So I'm wondering, how do you distinguish yourself from those other Republicans?
Mm-hmm. So, good other candidates. I will say I supported Darren Bailey strongly last time. I did. He was my candidate of choice. And unfortunately, he lost by more than 12 points overall. He lost by 35 points in Cook County in the suburbs. But he's got the name ID since he ran last time, and he also ran against Mike Bost. So he's the one to catch up with the name ID. But I am from Cook County. My running mate's from Cook County. I think I've got the experience of living in Cook County and operating in Cook County to get more votes there. So I think that's the big difference is I can have appeal that's much broader, not just downstate, not just Southern Illinois, but also in Chicago. So I think that's a big key. And being half Latino, half Polish, I can really reach out to other constituencies that it maybe is a little different for most Republicans. So I think that's a big deal. Rick Heidner, who's already showing up in ads and spending money, I think he's got to prove himself with the grassroots. He's given money to Kim Fox. He's given money to Brandon Johnson, to Tony Preckwinkle, to Don Harmon. These are
names that are maybe toxic in Republican politics.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, it's I think hard for him to say that he's a grassroots candidate when you give to Kim Fox, who has been responsible for the dramatic crime in Chicago. I think that's going to be tough for primary voters to swallow. And then Sheriff Mendrick is a good guy, but he's in DuPage County. His passion is public safety, as it is, 30 years. So I'm different from all them because I'm the one that's building the coalition. I've got the broadest financing base of all of them, not just Chicago based, but downstate as well. And Dick Uihlein, the most conservative donor in Illinois, he was with Bailey last time, gave Bailey $50 million. He's now in our camp. So we've won over a lot of the support that Darren had in the past. Also from the Family Institute, David Smith was with Bailey before, now with us. So we are building and have built that coalition of donors, grassroots, and the political support that nobody else is putting together.
And I wanted to ask you about some polling, and we've not seen a ton of publicly released polling in this race, but there was an Emerson College poll that was released earlier this month, and in this one instance, 34% of primary voters supported Darren Bailey, and you came in second at 8%. And I do want to mention that 46% of voters said they were undecided still. So how are you, trying to break through and overcome maybe the name recognition that Darren Bailey has and build momentum at this point in the race?
Right. So that was done right after the holiday. So, people aren't paying attention yet. And I've been building the grassroots organization. We got a great ground game. People are in place. So we've got that in place. We're now taking a big part of our spend and putting it to social media. We ran two ads during the Bears games, the two Bear games. That was exciting because we had that one opportunity. And the one that just ran against the Rams has done amazing. I've gone to places. I've gone to black churches. I've gone to Buffalo Grove suburbs. I'm meeting people say, hey, I saw your ad. And so that's how we're trying to build up the name ID. People are paying attention now, finally. And so, we're getting more media. Here we are today. So people get to know us. And so we need to do the catch up with that. And I think Darren's stuck, I think. He's flat. And it's for the rest of us to go grab that 46% and persuade people to come over to us. My message is this: we're the only campaign that can build the coalition to beat Pritzker. And so I think we're gonna steal the support from the other candidates, but that's the challenge, of course.
Well, and that leads me nicely into my next question, was Bruce Rauner was the last Republican to hold a statewide office. Is winning in Illinois as a Republican actually possible, especially given that it's a midterm election and generally the party that's been in power tends to not do as well as they would in other elections like in 2024 or 2022?
Yeah, I'd say you would probably be right in general circumstances, but I think we got a special situation in Illinois. Brandon Johnson is making a mess of Chicago, destructive of many of his policies. And Pritzker and Brandon Johnson have the same policies. Johnson's more aggressive. Pritzker's smarter about how he does it, but they have the same exact, anti-police, very, very far-left policies. And so I think that this time around, there will be Pritzker fatigue. This would be a third term for him. If you look at it, highest property taxes in the country under him. He doubled the motor fuel tax. We now have the second highest gas taxes. That's on him. The CTA bailout that stole money from downstate in Southern Illinois to give it to the CTA bailout, that's on him. Chicagoans now pay the highest sales taxes in the country. You start adding all that stuff up, you have Caterpillar leave under his watch, the headquarters. He had the headquarters of Boeing leave under his watch. You've got Citadel leaving under Pritzker's watch. This is horrible things for Illinois. We should be one of the best states in the country. We should be attracting the Caterpillars of the world. Instead, we're repelling them. So I think people are open-minded. You know, this illegal immigration that Pritzker supported in Chicago and Brandon Johnson, it's got a lot of people upset how Pritzker put illegal immigrants over Chicago residents. And there's people looking for change. So I think there's a good moment, even though you mentioned some of the cycles that we'll see how they play out. But this is a change election. And if you want more of the same, you vote for Pritzker, all these things that have happened. But if you want change, if you want somebody who's going to attack these taxes, somebody's going to stop putting illegal immigrants first, this is a moment for change. And I'm volunteering myself to lead that change.
And if you are elected governor, you will have to work with Democrats who hold supermajorities in both chambers of the state house, as I'm sure you well know.
Sure.
How would you work with them? And would you need to compromise with them in order to actually pass legislation because of the super minority status that your party is in the state house?
Yeah, I want to stick to our principles of change. I argue taxpayers have compromised year after year after year. They've been whacked every time. They get nothing. And I want to say that, we don't need to compromise. What we need to do is persuade the public that, it's the Democrats. They have super majorities. They've had the governorship, except with the exception of Rauner. All those problems that we have today are on them. And so if you want change, join us. Join our principles, right? We can't tax our way to prosperity. Let's get rid of that, right? We have to bring our, I talk about education. We need school choice here. Our kids need alternatives because many of them are trapped in failing schools. That's another. We need more jobs. We can't continue to just squeeze companies so that they feel like they just have to leave. If you look at the growth of Indiana, if you look at the growth of Tennessee, North Carolina, and then, of course, Florida and Texas, they are attracting companies. They're attracting massive number of jobs, and we're losing them. So we have to flip that whole mentality and become a winner again. We can't be a bottom five state. We've got everything in place to be a top five state in this country.
Last question I wanted to ask about maybe on the campaign side of things before we mm-hmm. jump into some of those issues is President Trump. And I wanted to ask, mostly just because he's really redefined the Republican Party over the last now 10 years. Mm-hmm. Darren Bailey has got his support in previous elections. It appears based on social media that
He didn't get it with Bost.
With Bost, right. Yep.
Because
yep.
Bost got the
yes.
support.
Good mm-hmm. point. Yep. But in 2022 with mm-hmm. the governor's race, mm-hmm. and it appears Rick Heidner has maybe at least made some efforts on social media if you read into those. But is that's something that you've been courting a Trump endorsement in this race?
So I haven't courted a Trump endorsement yet. I'm just trying to get my name out. But if Trump were to endorse me, take it, much like Glenn Youngkin did. I think Trump is doing amazing things. He closed the border. My gosh, that was something that was needed. He put school choice in the federal bill. He's focused on getting crime down. Not getting crime down. He's focused on safe cities, which I really love. Not just crime coming down. He's trying to bring manufacturing back. He's doing, I think, things that are so critical. But I always argue that in Illinois, the highest property taxes in the country, that's not a federal issue. We have to do that, right? Companies leaving Illinois, that's something we have to work on. So, Trump is doing a lot of things that are I hope will help Illinois. But man, we have a huge job to do in solving our own problems, like the ones that we've created.
So fiscal policy and affordability seems to be maybe a theme of not only your campaign, but of the 2026 midterms. And obviously this is a state election and not a federal one. But how would you make everyday life more affordable for Illinoisans if you were elected?
Yeah, so I really want to pursue on property taxes. It doesn't matter where I go. Southern Illinois, Central Illinois, Chicago, West Side, South Side. Property taxes are the number one issue. So if we want to solve the kitchen table issues, we got to address that one. And what I want to do is not just try to chip away at things, right? We got to culturally change how we do things. And so I think of Indiana. They have a 1% cap on what your property taxes can be based on the value of your home. I want to let's replicate that. That's a really good one. That way, people will know that they will never be squeezed out of their home by these 4 and 5%. We have some crazy tax rates. We're already double. On average, we're double. We're at 2%, where Indiana's at lower than 1%. Nationally, it's about 1%. Let's have that ambition to go after something like that. I have to persuade the legislature to go after something like that. And then let's work on the drivers that are pushing taxes so high. And, you know, a lot of that we know is the bloat, is a lot of the corruption in Illinois. There's plenty of just administrative waste. We've had massive growth in hiring in our schools, massive growth in our universities, not for teachers, but for administrators and bureaucrats. So all that stuff we can really go after. And let's focus on getting the money spent in the right places and cut it where it doesn't belong.
Illinois has some of the highest property taxes in Illinois, in the country.
Yep.
Thank you. If you were elected, how would you convince the legislature to cut them? And then also, how would you replace them, if you were to at all, to keep local governments funded?
Yeah, so I don't think when we cut spending, I don't think it has to be that we need to find money elsewhere. We already have, if you look at the total taxes in Illinois, many groups find that we're the highest in the country, total local and state taxes. So we don't need, again, I've said that the people have compromised enough. They're paying out the wazoo. So what we need to do is look at things like, we have the most units of government in the country. You know, there's all kinds of governments we have. You know, if you add up Iowa, Wisconsin, and Indiana, I can't remember which three states you add up, they have, you know, when you combine them, they still have fewer units of government than we have, you know, just as a state alone. So that's a huge place. And again, when you have the most units of government, guess what? You have the most bureaucrats in the country. So that's where we're going to find the savings.
And I think in particular, this part of the state, that's very much the case. Townships are very much still a thing. And then also, I used to live in Belleville, and Belleville has multiple school districts. And that is very much a St. Clair County thing. And I know you're not from this neck of the woods, but multiple school districts is, I really thought was interesting moving here from different parts of the Midwest.
Right. And it also depends where, but so I live in the expensive part of the world up there in the North Shore. And, you know, that's where we have multiple school districts that are coterminous. You could make it into one, but instead, where I live, there's 7 school districts that could just become one unit district. Each one of the superintendents there makes over $300,000 a year. And that means you have big staff, expensive staff, which turns into big pensions. All of that just adds up. And listen, I love local government. I love local control. I don't like duplicative government and wasteful government.
I noticed on social media you had made reference to Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe wanting to cut or phase out income taxes if Missouri voters were to approve it. Meanwhile, Governor Pritzker has said that he would like to at some point increase income taxes on the wealthiest. How would you handle income taxes as governor?
My gosh, you know, I tell you, From a think about it, taxes reduce the level of something, right? When you tax something, you're going to get less of it. For me, the most important activity that we can have that we should protect is labor, work. I would love for anybody who works to keep all of their money. We want to incentivize more work. So I love zero income taxes. I would love to us in Illinois think about that. I mean, if you look at the most flourishing states right now, it's Florida, it's Texas, Tennessee, right? They're all zero income tax states. And here we are, Governor Pritzker's talking about raising our taxes. I mean, he's just the wrong way. I mean, and he wants progressive taxes. Most states are moving to flat and moving down towards zero. So, I would love to at some point think about that. You know, Missouri, they're going to start competing. When they get a zero income tax, they're going to attract people.
61% of voters supported what is known as a millionaire tax in the 2024 election. That's an advisory referendum, so it wouldn't actually or didn't surmount to any change in the state's tax code. But does that signal that the public isn't on board with changing Illinois' income taxes that involves the wealthiest paying more?
Yeah, I think, you know, these are all about campaigns. And we all know that we have crazy campaigns these days that have all the fake names, right? The Safety Act in Illinois doesn't keep you safe. The Trust Act, which is about for the immigrants, these are misnomers. And I think when they run these kind of referendums, people don't quite know what they're voting for. Right? If I were to say, hey, we can raise taxes on people, but we're going to lose our wealthiest and our corporations and they're going to leave, do you support that tax? They'd say no. So it all depends on how you ask it. People need to know that we are already being taxed out of our, you know, out of our homes, out of our state. So the campaign that I would run is like, heck no, right? Heck no. We're going to protect our taxpayers. our poorest taxpayers, our richest taxpayers. We can't keep chasing our productive. I mean, look at that. We lost Ken Griffin. He was, worth $24 billion, $30 billion, whatever it is. And all the team that went with the amount of people we lost and the tax base we lost is scary, phenomenal, bad, but it's gone.
Maybe continuing on the affordability theme, you and other Republicans have been critical of the Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act that Governor Pritzker recently signed into law. And for those that don't know, it will fund battery storage. It will result in a new charge for ratepayers, but proponents say the storage will save customers money down the line. Why wasn't this the right move in your eyes?
Well, I think it all starts with the previous move where we are, they are so obsessed about moving to clean energy before they figured out whether they have enough clean energy, before they know if they can connect it to the grid. And at the same time, we're getting rid of our base load, our coal and our natural gas, which we can count on. We know it's there. They're stopping that too fast, and they have no plan on how to replace it. So here we are watching our energy bills go up with these dreams of moving to green energy before it's time, before they've proven, before we stop subsidizing it, all that. And so they're making a mess. And what we need to do is just get back to making sure that we have our stable, great sources of energy before we convert to green energy. So we need to repeal a lot of what's going on, make it so that we're not whacking again companies and people with these massive bills.
And if I'm hearing you correctly, it maybe doesn't sound like you're necessarily critical of green energy, just the way it has been implemented via the state law.
Absolutely. Look, when we get great green energy sources that are reliable, that we can count on, that we don't have to subsidize like crazy with taxpayer money, when we get all that, everybody will be for it. Yeah, whatever's the best source of energy. But until then, don't destroy what we have. And, you know, these are not only are they, you know, keeping our base load of coal and natural gas and all that, not only does it keep our energy prices down, they're job creators too. And so why would we mess all that up before we have proven sources of green energy?
You mentioned the Safety Act. Many Republicans have been critical of the Safety Act, particularly the part of the legislation that eliminated cash bail. How do you feel about the Safety Act?
Can I just say one thing about the energy before?
Oh, yeah, no, go for it.
Yeah, yep. I tell you, I was fortunate when I was down here. I don't know, it's been more than a few weeks ago, but I went down to the Nighthawk coal mine, and I got a real appreciation for the hard work those men do. I mean, I'm sure women too, but I got to speak to that big group of miners after their shift, and I really appreciated their work. I mean, they take a lot of risks. They're down there doing hard work, and to think that we would just cut off the switch before we're ready, it's just sad. And so, you know, kudos to them for the work they do. So you asked about the Safety Act. Well, we should get rid of it. The Safety Act is not keeping us safe. We ended cash bail, so we lost one way to control bad guys. And we're letting so many felons back out on the street. We see the news all the time. CWB Chicago, which is a group up there who reports on this, they do a great job of reporting. They're the only ones that are tracking how all these felons and ex-felons are back on the street creating crimes, and the Safety Act isn't working to keep those bad guys in jail. And so we're protecting the criminals and exposing the victims.
Democrats, including Governor Pritzker and House Speaker Chris Welch, have said they are open to amending it. If you were governor, or maybe you were part of the legislative process, how would you change it? Or would you just say, no, there's no fixing this. We need to get rid of it.
No, I used to think, let's try to tweak it and all that. No, because it's, you know, we'll be stuck trying to preserve we're trying to make a bad bill less bad. No, we should get rid of it, and anything that's good, bring it back up. But let's get rid of it, because we can't be the way we are. Look, this is an important part for me. Our public safety has to start with protecting and backing the police. Johnson is a defund the police guy. Pritzker's never backed the police. And so our morale is so low, we need to start over. As governor, I will give the strongest endorsement to our police to get the morale up. And then we got to take the handcuffs off the cops and put them on the criminals. So allow foot chases again, allow car chases again. You know, bad guys know that they can go carjack a car, and they're not going to get chased by the police now. They know that. You know, they know that they can steal something and run, and the police can't chase them. We have limited our ability to protect our citizens.
And I wanted to ask, too, about, well, maybe the thing that would have generated a lot of headlines and created a lot of discussion about the Safety Act was a horrific attack on public transit in Chicago mm-hmm. in November. And in that case, the individual did have a long track record of criminal history. The state's attorney did ask for him to be detained, but the judge said no. And I know there are going to be some that who view that particular situation not as necessarily condemnation of the broader elimination of cash bail, but rather a judge making a terrible decision. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of think about that?
Yeah, so I've written about this a lot, you know, over the past, a bad guy in Chicago right now looks at a really low arrest rate, partly based on low morale. Many of the crimes don't even get reported anymore. Many of the crimes the police can't make it to. There's not enough police. And then you get to the part you're talking about. Our prosecutors don't prosecute, right? So the bad guy gets arrested the same day they're back out on the street. And if they get prosecuted, our sentencing, our judges don't pass a sentence as strong enough to keep them behind bars. And so a bad guy knows, it's like, I've got zero, I can almost guarantee that I'll be on the street again if I do something bad. So they have an incentive to go create crime and profit from it. So what I'd like to do and what should be done is we should have great transparency on the prosecutors who are failing and the judges who are failing. The judges who continue to let out bad guys who create new crimes, we should transparently know who those judges are and what their failures are. Same thing with prosecutors, and give the people the power to say, we don't want those people in office anymore.
You've mentioned education and your passion for literacy rates. I was just reading your blog post on WirePoints about evidence-based formula that would have been the system that Illinois went to a few years back to fund public education, which would have increased funding for the least funded schools. Why is the evidence-based formula not a good move for the state of Illinois?
It's purely a political formula. It has nothing to do with accountability. I could just give you the example. In 2019, I talked about Decatur. And this is where I did my focus, just as a starting point. It's indicative of the problem in Illinois. Just 2% of black third graders are reading at grade level. I've made huge noise about that. It was in the Wall Street Journal. It was in the debate. We talked about all that. Guess what the number is today, in 2024? 2%. No change. Nothing. Did anybody care? We put so much emphasis on that. That's why I say I would love to see we pass that law. If you can't read in third grade, then you can't go to fourth. Because that brings everybody together, unions, teachers, parents, volunteers, corporations who want to get engaged, bring them all together. Let's get our kids reading before they get to third grade or fourth grade, because if they can't, they will become dependent on the government. Some will go to crime. They won't be productive citizens, and you need a workforce. So we need to obsess about that.
You also mentioned school choice earlier in our conversation. Illinois lawmakers let a private school tax credit program for scholarships expire in 2023. Mm-hmm. Was that a mistake?
Oh, huge mistake. Huge. You're seeing a massive wave of school choice across the country. Iowa now has what's called universal school choice. Universal means that it doesn't matter if you're rich, poor, black, white, Hispanic. If you want to access a education savings account, $8,000, it's public money, grab it. You leave the public school system and you go either to a private school, you go for homeschooling, but you are now free to choose a different direction on education. Indiana, they'll give you an $8,000 voucher to go to any private school you want. So we are seeing school choice blossom across the country, Ohio, Arizona, Florida, everybody. In Illinois, Pritzker and the legislature took us backwards. We became the first state to kill a major school choice program, and now we have no school choice. We are extreme.
How do you go about improving literacy rates in places like Decatur for black children, like you were kind of just talking about, but also bringing back, if you were governor, I'm assuming, a school choice program where some would say you're going to take taxpayer dollars and funnel it over to private education? How do you go about doing both of those things?
Oh, it's totally works both. I mean, if parents want to stay in public schools and public schools improve, then public schools will be fine. If the public schools won't improve, then parents will take their kids out. It doesn't steal the money because the kid's not there anymore, right? Here's what I say. We have to set high standards. Governor Pritzker and the legislature just lowered standards. They didn't raise standards. They lowered them. so that we would show better results. That's the kind of trickery we have right now. Parents should be able to flee that kind of trickery on their own. And we've been talking about this problem not for the last couple of years. This is a 50-year problem longer. So I want to just say, hey, it's the parents who are in control. It's about their kids. It's not the schools. It's not the unions. It's not the legislators. It's not the governor. Parents should decide for themselves. It's their children. Give them the power. And school choice gives them that power.
Governor Bruce Rauner made Illinois a sanctuary state in 2017 mm-hmm. when he signed the Trust Act, which we talked a little bit about. That means, generally speaking, the state and local law enforcement don't assist the federal government when it comes to immigration enforcement, for those mm-hmm. that don't know. You've said you would repeal it. Why?
Well, you know, look at, I just talked about extreme. We're extreme again here. If you look at a state like Florida or a state like Tennessee or a state like Indiana, they have the exact opposite law that we have. In those states, they say local governments must coordinate, cooperate with federal government. So if there's a bad guy in the Florida jail and ICE has a detainer for them, local authorities just hand over the bad guy right to the federal authorities. Problem over. No need for chases. No need. They're not letting the bad guy out in the street. That's what their laws are. We are the extreme on the other side. Our law says local government is prohibited from working with federal authorities. So what happens? Bad guy is ready to get out. Local authorities let them out. They're out on the street. What the heck is that? Why are we letting criminals back out on the street? And then it forces ICE to go chase them down, which creates all the other chaos. So that's why I'd get rid of it. I would just work with federal authorities. These are criminals. We're talking about murderers or pedophiles or drunk drivers or whatever it is. Hand them over because they don't belong here. And it's that simple.
Wanted to also ask you about Bears funding. Do you think the state of Illinois should have any role in helping fund the next Bears stadium?
So I'm on record as saying, hey, we need to protect taxpayers, right? I've said we've sacrificed over and over. I don't understand how any governor could say, well, this time we're gonna take money from the taxpayers again and give it to a multi-billion franchise. I can't do that. Now, that said, I love the Bears. I want the Bears here, man. That was fun what we just went through. Great playoffs. So the good news is what I was saying has come out to be what the Bears are saying. They're now saying they're going to privately fund the stadium. So now you're just back to the question of public financing of infrastructure. And I would say, to the extent that this is public infrastructure that the public benefits from, right, then that's what we should be discussing. But to give any major subsidies and tax breaks to the Bears, I think at this stage, we're seeing a lot of we're seeing more and more private funding of these things across the country. And that's the way it should be. I think a lot of the research shows that the state doesn't win when it funds big stadiums.
And I'm imagining there's probably people down in this neck of the woods who would have been Rams fans and who are very still after 11 years now that the St. Louis Rams have gone to Los Angeles, that they're still mad enough at the NFL, and they may say, we don't dislike Chicago, we don't dislike the Bears, but we wouldn't want to see Illinois taxpayer funds at all, even if it's for public infrastructure around the stadium, go to the Bears.
Right.
Would that need to be just state funds to support it, or could it be local funds that support it?
And that's part of the big debate. They're trying to pass a mega project deal here and all that. And I just, I've come to the point, our state's spending money on illegal immigrants. Our state can't fund its pensions. Our state is, we've got these big deficits again, $2 billion deficits. I've already talked about all the taxes we have. I'm tired of asking people to fork over more money. No, it's we have to get just back to, look, businesses. I've been on record very strongly. Goshen, this EV electric battery maker, Chinese communist owned, got $500 million from Pritzker, through the subsidies. Why the heck are we taking money from everyday Illinois and giving it to a company like that who is against a lot of our national interest? A lot of people don't want it for environmental reasons. We have to stop doing that. It's the wrong culture. We can't keep handing out money and allowing the governor and governments to pick winners and losers.
Second to last question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why should a primary voter pick you?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier, I'm building a one, I've got the experience that I've done the last 15 years of working on policy, taxes. I'm on record in the Wall Street Journal. I'm on record in so many different places of what I stand for. And so it's easy to Google Ted Dabrowski and Wire Points, and you can see I've been consistent. I will argue I've been principled. I don't bend. And so that's important. So the 15 years of you know, talking to legislators, coming up with testifying, all that stuff, working with grassroots groups. But the bigger issue is that I think I've got the ability to build the coalition that's necessary. You know, for me, when I was fundraising to start the campaign, I wanted to make sure that I could get the Chicago donors are a big part of this. They, you know, they need to see they're the economic engine. If they're not in, then we have a hard time. But I raised money from the downstate donors, and I mentioned Dick Uihlein, conservative donors. So pulling together that is key. And then, you know, being from Cook County and all that, I can, you know, I and my partner, we can do well enough to in Cook County, the suburbs, so that when you add up the votes with the central and southern, we can beat Pritzker. And I think the whole goal among primary voters is we have to get rid of Pritzker. Your quality of life in Illinois is just not better under Pritzker. Your physical security is at risk. Your economic security is definitely at risk. Opportunity is way down. And so if you want to improve quality of life, I'm the person that's going to bring that back. I'm going to fight for it.
If people are curious, where can they find out more about you or your campaign, Ted?
Well, great. Go to the social media, Ted for Illinois, at Ted for Illinois. And then, of course, tedforillinois.com is our website. And you can reach us there, volunteer, get engaged, challenge us if you want to. You know, we love challenges because we, you know, we need to debate these things. But we're looking for the support and just the engagement. We need people. We need you. So join us, and we're going to fight for this state and win it back. And it's going to be hard work. It's going to be a big, big battle, but we're ready for it.
Ted, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you.
Ted is the first of four Republicans running for the governor's office that we're hoping to speak with. We'll hopefully speak with the others on later episodes. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Till next time, so long.